Music you love here on VOA 1, The Hit.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Ashley Thompson.
And I'm Dan Novak. This program is designed for English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English. Coming up on the program, we will hear stories from Dorothy Gundy and Dan Friedel. Faith Perlow brings us everyday grammar on describing birthdays. Later, Kelly Jean Kelly tells us about America's 32nd president, Franklin Delano Roosevelt. But first, here is Katie Weaver.
Ethiopia's government is criticizing a statement by the leader of the World Health Organization, Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus. On Wednesday, the WHO Director General said the crisis in Ethiopia's Tigray area is the worst disaster on Earth. He suggested that world leaders might be ignoring the situation because of Tigrayans' skin color. A spokeswoman for Ethiopia's prime minister on Thursday described Tedros's comments as unethical and unbecoming of such a high-profile position. The spokeswoman said the WHO chief, himself an ethnic Tigrayan, should recuse himself from his position if he wants to talk that way. Tedros had given an emotional statement at a press conference. He told reporters that the 6 million people in Tigray have been under siege for the last 21 months after fighting began between Ethiopian and Tigray forces. "I haven't heard in the last few months any head of state talking about the Tigray situation anywhere in the developed world. Anywhere. Why?" Tedros asked. "Maybe the reason is the color of the skin of the people in Tigray," he said. Earlier this year, Tedros asked whether the world's major focus on Russia's war in Ukraine was based in racism. However, he also noted that the Ukraine situation affected much of the world. Very little humanitarian aid was permitted into Tigray after Tigrayan forces retook much of the area in June 2021. Humanitarian workers and local health providers described people there starving to death and a severe need of medical supplies. Aid started flowing more in the past few months with international efforts. However, the deliveries are widely described as inadequate to meet the needs of the millions of people trapped by the conflict. Aid groups say major shortages of fuel remain, limiting the transportation of supplies. Tigrayan leaders continue to demand the return of basic services and banking. On Thursday, the prime minister's spokeswoman said, "An operable environment needs to happen for the return of those services." She said safety guarantees are needed for service workers in the area. She noted a government proposal for peace talks in the coming weeks to be held without preconditions. She accused the Tigrayan leaders of looking for excuses to avoid these peace talks. She also dismissed reports from Tigrayan forces of new attacks by Ethiopian forces. Ethiopia's government has said it is willing to hold talks anytime, any place. But it said such discussions must be led by the special diplomat for the African Union. I'm Katie Weaver.
The Vietnamese government has ordered big technology companies operating there to set up systems to keep user information more secure. The first step, set up local offices and computer storage inside the country's borders. The move to protect information saved on computer networks will affect some of the world's biggest media companies like Google and Meta, the company that runs Facebook. The rule goes into effect on October 1st. The new rule covers a wide range of information. It includes financial records, identifying health and medical data, information about people's ethnicity, and it includes any other information collected by companies that follow internet users as they move online. Vietnamese officials say they will be able to request the information if it is needed for an investigation. The new rule also says media companies may be required to remove online material if it violates government guidelines. Foreign technology companies will have 12 months to meet the rule's requirements. They will need to set up computer storage devices and local offices. Once the information is stored within Vietnam, the companies will need to keep it for a minimum of 2 years. Google and Meta did not respond to requests for comment from the Reuters news agency. The new rules are the latest step by Vietnam's Communist Party to tighten the flow of information online. The nation's leadership started with a cybersecurity law in 2019 and introduced guidelines about how to behave on social media last year. I'm Dorothy Gundy.
Teams of volunteers in Ukraine are helping to rebuild homes damaged during the Russian invasion that started in February. Shelling from artillery, aerial bombardment, and machine gun fire wrecked many homes and buildings, but volunteers in some areas are using material taken from destroyed homes to rebuild ones needing repair. Maria Metla is 66 years old. Bombing destroyed her home in Novoselica, a village 140 kilometers north of Kyiv, the capital. While standing in her destroyed home, Metla described her experience. She said, "We took what we could to the basement. Five bombs, one, two, three, four, five, exploded in the field behind us." Metla keeps a burned exercise bicycle and a religious icon of St. Nicholas to remind her of her life before the war. Now Metla is depending on her neighbors for a place to live this winter. Most mornings, volunteers arrive at her destroyed home to take away material they can use for rebuilding. This salvaged material includes things like bricks, metal taken from kitchen machines, and pieces of insulation panels. The volunteers are rebuilding homes along the perimeter where Russia attempted to surround and capture Kyiv. Last month, Ukraine's officials said that the country had suffered more than $100 billion in damage to its roads, bridges, and important structures. This amount is equal to two-thirds of Ukraine's 2020 gross domestic product, a measure of the size of a country's economy. But some observers estimate that the reconstruction effort could cost more than seven times that amount. Ukrainian officials are asking Western countries to give them property seized from Russia in addition to what they are willing to donate. Novoselica is a village filled with fruit trees, sunflowers, and gardens with chickens, but container homes from Poland are being set up near the village. The huge amount of damage has created many local rebuilding projects. Andriy Galyuga is a local volunteer organizer. He said that people do not want to leave even if their home is destroyed. He said, "In many other countries, if your home is destroyed, you might put up a for sale sign and move to another town. It's not like that here. People are very attached to where they are from, and they don't want to leave." Galyuga's organization, Bomozhemo, is in contact with similar efforts that have started in many places near the Ukrainian capital. At one smashed home, Galyuga quickly goes inside to direct a team of 25 volunteers. They are gathering salvaged cinder blocks. Then they take away other building materials using special tools. Children and retired women help the effort. The worried homeowner, Zhanna Danieva, watches their work. Danieva makes food for the workers, many of whom have also lost their homes. Danieva looks thin and is staying with a friend, but she visits her home daily to take care of her garden. She carried trays of drinks and sandwiches on the day the volunteers came to visit. Danieva said, "I am so grateful to them. People around me have helped so much." As she tells about her escape from the bombardment, Danieva starts crying. Her homeless neighbor, Metla, hugs Danieva. Danieva said she hopes she can stay on her property, possibly in a simple shelter. She said, "I don't know what will happen to us. Winter will be here soon. I just worry all the time." I'm Dan Friedel.
Last week, my niece and I celebrated our birthdays together. We both turned 35 years old in the beginning of August. Her birthday is just a few days before mine. We celebrated by going to a lake and having lunch outside. I had such a wonderful birthday. Today, on Everyday Grammar, we will learn to describe our birthdays. When people ask us the question, "When is your birthday?" we can answer a few different ways. We can use the season, spring, summer, autumn, fall, or winter, the month, or the day. My birthday is in the summer.
Her father's birthday is in March.
Last Sunday was her birthday.
His birthday is the 4th of May.
Remember that the word birthday is different from birth date. Birth date is the exact date, like December 7th, 1997. The word birthday can be the date, or you can answer more generally. For example, my niece's birthday is in August.
Her birth date is August 3rd.
When we want to say how old we are, we can use the present or future verb tenses depending on when our birthdays are. We can use the past tense with the verb turn. If we are talking about a future birthday, say next year or in a few months, we can answer the question of how old will you be with I will be plus age or
I'll be plus number years old.
In 2023, I will be 36 years old. On your birthday, you can use the present tense.
Deborah is 55 today.
For the past tense, we can use the structure of the verb be plus age, years old, but we generally use it to talk about past ages in reference to something else. We can also use the verb turn to talk about how old we are. In this way, turn means to reach or pass a certain age. Therefore, we can use the past tense with turn for talking about birthdays. For example, I turned 35 this year. This means that my birthday was in the past. I am still considered to be 35 years old after my birthday. In the present tense, we can use turn to say that a birthday is today, as in,
Brad turns 60 today.
And to express a future birthday, we can use the same form, the present tense.
Kristen turns 41 this year.
This means that sometime this year, the near future, Kristen will be 41 years old. We can use the modal verb of will with turn to express a future birthday. I will turn 36 next year. When talking about making plans for a birthday, someone may ask you, "What do you want to do for your birthday?" You can answer with ideas of plans that you would like to do. You can use the expressions, "I want to," or "I would like to be more polite. You can even use the expression I plus be going to if you have already made the plans yourself. She wants to go to a French restaurant for her birthday.
I'm going to celebrate with my friends later.
If your birthday has already passed, someone may ask you,
"How was your birthday?"
You can answer by describing your birthday with an adjective.
My birthday party was wonderful.
Then they may ask you,
"What did you do for your birthday?"
You can answer in the past tense. For my birthday this year, we went to an amusement park. If someone wants to get you a gift for your birthday, they may ask you,
"What do you want for your birthday? What do you want on your birthday?"
If you want something for your birthday, that means a gift, generally. If you want something on your birthday, that could be a party or to make some type of plans to celebrate on the actual date.
On my birthday next year, I would like to go to the countryside. Please don't buy me anything for my birthday.
After your birthday, people may ask you what you received as a gift for your birthday.
What did you get for your birthday? What did you get on your birthday?
You could say that you got or received something.
I got a cat for my birthday.
Or you could say what you got and who gave it to you.
My mom sent me a lovely birthday card in the mail.
Here's how you might tell someone about another's birthday.
Her husband gave her jewelry for her birthday.
Let's end this report with a homework assignment. In 5 to 8 sentences, write about your birthday this year. Try to use ideas that you have learned about in today's report. You can use the question headings as your guide. Remember to use the correct verb tense depending on when your birthday is. Send your writing to our email address, learningenglish@voanews.com. We will select one piece of writing and provide feedback and suggestions in a future report. I'm Faith Perlow.
And I'm Jill Robbins.
Presidents. Today we are talking about Franklin Delano Roosevelt. He was related to an earlier president with the same last name, Theodore Roosevelt. Many Americans call Franklin Roosevelt by the first letter of each word in his full name, FDR. When FDR took office, the United States was in a severe economic depression. The previous president, Herbert Hoover, had tried to improve the economy, but his efforts had failed. FDR defeated Hoover in the election of 1932. He won, in part, by promising what he called a New Deal for Americans. Voters did not know what FDR's New Deal meant exactly, but many liked his message of hope. Voters also did not know how much FDR would change the country. He remained in office for 12 years, the longest of any U.S. president, and led the country through the Great Depression and most of World War II. Along the way, he changed the way government affected Americans' lives and the job of the U.S. president. Franklin Roosevelt was born on a large estate in New York, about 140 kilometers outside New York City. He was the only child of wealthy parents. His mother and father made sure he had an excellent education. As a young man, he attended a private high school and then Harvard College in Massachusetts. He also studied law at Columbia University in New York. Young FDR was not an excellent student, however. He was interested in many things outside the classroom, including politics and girls. Two of FDR's interests came together in a young woman named Anna Eleanor Roosevelt, who went by the name Eleanor. She was the niece of a politician FDR greatly respected, President Theodore Roosevelt. On the day when Franklin and Eleanor Roosevelt were married, Theodore Roosevelt attended the ceremony. In fact, he walked with his niece in front of the guests to her future husband. Franklin and Eleanor Roosevelt went on to have 6 children, although one died as a baby. While Eleanor Roosevelt raised the children, Franklin Roosevelt directed his attention to politics. He left a job in a law office to serve in the New York State Senate. In time, he was offered a job in the federal government as an assistant secretary of the Navy. FDR enjoyed the job, but he continued seeking other political positions. He tried unsuccessfully for a seat in the U.S. Senate, but did get nominated by the Democratic Party to be its vice presidential candidate in 1920. Although he and his partner lost the race, FDR seemed like he was in a good position for major political success. But then, something unexpected happened. When he was 39 years old, FDR suffered major health problems. One day he started to feel a pain in his back. The following day his legs grew tired. Then his skin became sensitive. By the end of the week, both his legs were paralyzed. He could not move from the waist down. He remained paralyzed for the rest of his life. The next years were difficult for the Roosevelts. Eleanor and the children helped care for FDR, and he worked hard to recover some of his strength and physical abilities, especially by exercising. While he remained hopeful about his condition, FDR worried about his political career. He did not think the public would accept a leader who could not even walk by himself. So he took several measures. He created a small wheelchair that would not get too much attention. It was made from a dining room chair, with wheels instead of legs. He refused to let photographers take pictures of him being carried or struggling to move, and he found a way to appear as if he were walking. He used a cane or the arm of a partner to balance, and then he swung his hips to make his legs move forward. Using this method, FDR walked to the stage at the 1924 Democratic National Convention. He used the event to nominate the governor of New York for president. That man's bid did not succeed, but FDR showed himself to still be an able politician. 4 years later, FDR himself was elected governor of New York. He held the position in the early years of the country's economic crisis. In 1932, FDR was a candidate for president. He took the unusual step of appearing in person at the Democratic Convention to accept his party's nomination. His campaign was such a success that the Democrats took not only the White House, but majorities in both the U.S. Senate and House of Representatives. The strength of the Democratic Party in Congress would help FDR become one of the most powerful presidents the country had ever seen. Next week, we will continue our story of FDR and his presidency. I'm Kelly Jean Kelly.
And that's our program for today. Join us again tomorrow to keep learning English through stories from around the world. I'm Ashley Thompson.
And I'm Dan Novak.